It's an amazing story. Even social media savvy teens cannot fake a news story, a fake news story. We'll give you that coming up in a second. Also, there's a woman from the Westboro Baptist Church that has left the Westboro Baptist Church, and the reason why she left is fascinating and can be totally applied to your life today. We begin there right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I want to get to the media bias and American kids. Can they spot fake news stories? Can they spot bias? We'll give that to you here in just a second.
Megan Phelps Roper, she was in the Westboro Baptist Church.
Phelps
is the name. Fred Phelps was the head guy. And
90%. Is she adopted or is she?
No, I don't think so.
Child?
I think she's married.
Okay.
Now. So
she was a child of Fred.
Yeah. She grew up in, or it might be grandchild of Fred.
Okay.
Lost
him?
He's very old. I don't know.
Okay.
We've lost him. I don't keep up with every iteration of what goes on in the Westboro Baptist Church, but I do find it a fascinating topic in that they're so crazy. And to see that, you know, the people, if you don't know who they are, the people that go and they protest military funerals, they say God hates Jews and gays and
all kinds of stuff.
And all the things.
Really bad.
But, you know, they're the worst part of every news story,
mm-hmm.
basically. They come out and they're like, oh, God, this is a tragedy. Now it's worse. Like, they are able to do it every single time.
Right.
So she grew up, and I don't, you know, I know we had someone who left the Westboro Baptist Church on a long time ago, and I can't remember if it was her or if it was someone else, because a couple of people have left. But almost everybody at the Westboro Baptist Church is from the Phelps family. It's like 80% Phelps family members.
Boy.
So she left the church a while ago and recently did a TED Talk on why she left and how it happened. And it's fascinating because, I mean, there are parts of it that sound like she's just lifting lines from Glenn Beck about how to deal with the world. Now, you might not want to be associated with someone who's in the Westboro Baptist Church.
But she's out of the Westboro
she's
Baptist
out,
Church.
And she's
really...
She's
talking about why she left. And for everybody who says, oh, you know, the left won't listen. Let's listen to how the woman... Do you think the left is less extreme than the Westboro Baptist Church?
If you could communicate with someone like that and break down those walls, you could do it with anybody.
And listen to what she said, how it was done. Listen to
this. In 2009, that zeal brought me to Twitter. Initially, the people I encountered on the platform were just as hostile as I expected. They were the digital version of the screaming hordes I'd been seeing at protests since I was a kid. But in the midst of that digital brawl, a strange pattern developed. Someone would arrive at my profile with the usual rage and scorn. I would respond with a custom mix of Bible verses, pop culture references, and smiley faces. They would be understandably confused and caught off guard, but then a conversation would ensue. And it was civil, full of genuine curiosity on both sides. How had the other come to such outrageous conclusions about the world? Sometimes the conversation even bled into real life. People I'd sparred with on Twitter would come out to the picket line to see me when I protested in their city. A man named David was one such person. He ran a blog called Julicious. And after several months of heated but friendly arguments online, he came out to see me at a picket in New Orleans. He brought me a Middle Eastern dessert from Jerusalem, where he lives, and I brought him kosher chocolate and held a God Hates Jews sign. There was no confusion about our positions, but the line between friend and foe was becoming blurred. We'd started to see each other as human beings, and it changed the way we spoke to one another. It took time, but eventually these conversations planted seeds of doubt in me.
Now imagine how many Jewish friends this guy had who said, what are you selling out? Don't you know she's using you? Don't you know you're being pulled in? You're a sellout. You got to stand against. How many people she had in her life saying the same thing? but they both were being civil to each other. And probably everyone in their life said, it's not going to change anything. And look what happened. You have another cut from her?
If you can win over the Westboro Baptist Church. And one other thing she mentioned quickly in there, and she went on length later, is something you've said a million times. She said the conversations always started, and neither of us changed our positions.
Yep.
Neither of us changed our principles. It was just listening. You don't have to change your ideas. It was listening and communicating like you're a friend.
And then start talking about families and things you have in common.
Yeah, and it helped, I mean, win over a Westboro Baptist church member, and to the extent of how crazy that would be, because you think of these people, I mean, they're obviously crazy.
God hates Jews. God hates, gays. Right. I mean, mm-hmm. you can't think of people who are more off the rocker than
these guys.
She
goes into that.
Yeah, and to talk about how indoctrinated she was, she talks about at the very beginning of this, that the first protest she went to, she was 5 years old. Protesting gays somewhere.
Wow.
Holding a sign she couldn't even read. Mm-hmm. That's how deeply she was in this. And she goes through this entire process. And through Twitter, we think of all these good people being turned bad through Twitter. Here's someone who went through Twitter and turned her life from pure evil to something else.
My friends on Twitter took the time to understand Westboro's doctrines. And in doing so, they were able to find inconsistencies I'd missed my entire life. Mm. Why did we advocate the death penalty for gays when Jesus said, let he who is without sin cast the first stone? How could we claim to love our neighbor while at the same time praying for God to destroy them? The truth is that the care shown to me by these strangers on the internet was itself a contradiction. It was growing evidence that people on the other side were not the demons I'd been led to believe. These realizations were life-altering. Once I saw that we were not the ultimate arbiters of divine truth, but flawed human beings, I couldn't pretend otherwise. I couldn't justify our actions, especially our cruel practice of protesting funerals and celebrating human tragedy.
Okay, stop here for a second. Let's just put this together. Both sides have this problem. Both sides, in one way or another, are the Westboro Baptist Church, both left and right. We have extremists on both sides. But for this audience, let's just think of the right or the left thinks they're the arbiter of everything that is true. We're not the science deniers. We're not that way. You're the science denier. Well, you aren't educated. We're educated. We have all the universities. They believe that everything intellectually is on their side, right? Mm-hmm. So they're morally superior. They don't see the disconnect between saying, let's march for women, and yesterday, while this was going on, they were advocating, the left was advocating and going against the CDC, saying, women are protesting the CDC because you men can't tell us not to drink during our pregnancy. Well, I agree that we can't tell you what to do. That's your decision, but that doesn't seem like something you later in life will be proud of standing and marching for. It doesn't seem logical to me that when all is said and done, you'll be proud that you marched for abortion, for the killing of children, that at some point in your life, you or most, I believe, will come to the determination that, that is a child, because there's no way, because of science is going to force you. I'm not the science denier. You're the one that says, I don't want a scan. I don't want an ultrasound to happen and give the women a chance to say, oh my gosh, it is a child. If they have that scan and they say, I don't care, well, that's a different subject. But you have to admit that that is a child. Otherwise, why would you say no to ultrasounds? Which one of us is in this bubble? Now, I'm only using this side because both sides are in a bubble. But anybody who says that they cannot reach the left, listen to what she just said. It was by kindness on the internet first, kindness of not slamming back, because the left does see the right as a monster, just like many on the right see the left as a monster. They're not. We're not. We disagree on things. and we ratchet it up because we're screaming at each other. But if we'll just start talking, and better yet, listening first to one another, you will find what I have found. Wow, we have a ton in common. Now, it's not going to change anything overnight. People say to me all the time, yeah, well, who have you changed? Well, nobody. But I will tell you, look how many people from the left have been on this show. Just 2 days ago, we had somebody on the left who said, you know what? I've changed my mind. I'm actually not on the left. I'm on the right. And I was diehard on the right or on the left. And now I've changed. So while I haven't personally done it, I think it is happening. And if you want to make it happen, she's giving you the recipe. And it's Martin Luther King's recipe. And unfortunately, most of our society is siding with Malcolm X. Most of us want the anger and hate and rage. We all want it to stop. But we're all being led to be convinced that nothing will ever change with the other side. And so it's of no use. That's a lie. And she's proof positive of that lie. At least I think so.
At the most extreme level possible.
Extreme level.
Yeah. I mean, if this isn't a proof of concept, I don't know what is.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Craziest elections. Our series continues just in a few minutes. Also, we want to talk to you a little bit about Obamacare. And Stu wants to give us the four steps that this woman from the Westboro Baptist Church said got me out of the church.
Yeah, she identified these, which I thought were interesting. One, don't assume bad intent. And that's something I like to use on social networks because it just makes your life better. You know, if you're constantly getting in fights with people, it's just annoying. And I've gone because people will insult you. Like I insult Jeffy all the time, and he knows it comes from a good place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I mean, that's how I look at everybody who calls me Hitler on the internet. Like it's somebody saying it to me. They mean it in a joking way, and I just treat it that way.
All right.
And I don't care.
You know what?
A lot of times
I'll see people online. They'll say something like, you know, you're so mean to Glenn and blah, blah, blah. You know, the one defender, yeah. You know, blah, 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 blah. And they'll be like, no, I'm a big fan of the show. I was joking.
Right. Yeah.
So if you don't assume bad intent, it saves you a lot of angst.
Yeah. And it also means you never get pissed off at the internet.
Yes.
I mean, I know a lot of so many people get obsessed in these little battles.
Yeah.
They never bother me. I never care what you say about me because if you go with that principle, just don't assume it's bad. All these interactions wind up being better. And many times, by the way, you turn people around. There's people who were fans of the show that didn't like one things that we said. They came out, they call us all sorts of names. If you respond
nicely,
I was
having a hard time.
Typically, they'll just turn around.
Finding the rainbow in all of that during the election. When they were saying things like eat crap and die, I didn't think that was necessarily good nature.
But I will tell you I gave up because it was just overwhelming at the time. But I will tell you that a lot of people will say, you know what? You're right. I'm sorry.
I flew off the handle.
Yeah, I flew off the handle. I don't agree with you, but I appreciate it.
Yeah. Step two, ask questions. So that's a great thing to do.
Even the very existence of God.
Honest question.
God.
But I mean, asking questions.
Surely rather.
Shut up.
Is important. And honest ones, right? It's not just like trying to come up with a point and just saying what you believe. And pushing other people and then asking questions that aren't honest because you
don't
ask
the question that you know the answer to.
Right.
Just trying to trap them into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This one is very difficult for a lot of people. But if you do the other two, you can do this one, which is stay calm. You know, the person who you're going up against in an argument, especially from the other side, are going to say terrible things about it. Why let it bother you? That's you. That's not them. That's you letting it bother you. You're making the choice to allow it to bother you. If you stay calm and don't let it bother you, you're able to kind of reason your way through the argument.
How amazing is it that this is coming from a Phelps, the granddaughter of Fred Phelps, the founder of the Westboro Baptist Church?
Yeah.
This is astounding.
And because it worked on her
to get her out.
That's really amazing.
Yeah.
She and her sister both got out.
Yep.
Yeah.
It might have been her sister we talked to.
It might have been her sister Grace we talked to.
Yeah, I think so.
I think it was.
But we should see if she'll come on too because it's great.
Yeah.
And then the last one is make the argument, which that one didn't strike me as obvious when I was listening to that list. But when you're on the line, you're in a battle with someone on the left or you're on the battle with someone who's nuts and you're trying to actually persuade them. a lot of times, I think, because we believe, for example, low taxes are the right thing to do, or abortion is wrong, or whatever the belief is, it's so apparent to us, we treat it as if it's doctrine to everybody, and we don't bother to walk people through the step-by-step argument of how you actually get there. Mm-hmm. So many people they start at their arrival point. I'm young, I'm in college, I'm a liberal, I'm a leftist, I love abortion. Mm-hmm. And there's not the process very well may not have ever happened where they made that decision organically, where they walked through the steps in their head.
I got to get to the survey. The survey shows that most people, and this includes teens, and I'll narrow it down to teens, but most people get their opinion from a friend or a blog, a commentator mm-hmm. of some sort. They haven't done the thinking. Mm-hmm. They get mm-hmm. their opinion from someone else who may or may not have done all of the thinking themselves.
So take the time to actually make the argument when you're talking to someone calmly. Don't assume their bad intent. If you follow those few steps, you're not going to win everybody over, nor should you care if you
Isn't
do.
Isn't it interesting?
But,
you're on the bandwagon.
I've been on the freaking wagon. I brought these clips to the show.
Listen to him now.
Stay calm. That's all I'm saying. Stay calm.
Listen to him now.
I'm assuming bad intent.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
No examination of crazy elections in America would be complete without mentioning the nation-altering election of 1912. Who would have guessed Woodrow Wilson will make an appearance? That would be the year incumbent president, Republican William Howard Taft, you know, the bathtub guy, battled for his party's nomination against former president Theodore Roosevelt. Roosevelt was the celebrity candidate of the day, with the press and throngs of admirers following him wherever he went. During the primaries, Roosevelt easily outdistanced the sitting president Taft in votes, roughly 1.2 million to 800,000. History professor Margaret O'Meara shares how different the convention turned out to be from the primaries.
When the convention opened, there were so many contested delegates that no single candidate had enough for the nomination. It was open season. So Roosevelt decides it's time for some bold moves, for some new politics. So he bucks tradition. Usually the candidates don't even show up at the conventions during this era. He comes to Chicago, where the convention's happening, and has a rock star's reception. He doesn't go into the hall, but he's right outside causing a big ruckus outside of it. But inside the hall, it's politics as usual. Taft's party machinery swings into action. And the result? Taft got nearly all the contested delegates, and he got the nomination.
When the dust settled, President Taft had taken 566 delegates to Roosevelt's 466. Progressive giant Robert La Follette claimed just 36. On the Democratic side, Woodrow Wilson and House Speaker Champ Clark were locked in a virtual dead heat after the primary season, each having won 5 states. Wilson had a slight edge in votes. However, heading into the Democratic convention in Baltimore, Clark actually had a significant lead in the delegate count. Professor O'Meara explains.
Even though he had the delegate lead, the conventional wisdom was that Clark was not up to the job of being president, and Wilson took advantage of that. Over the course of multiple rounds of balloting, day after day of the convention, Wilson steadily chipped away at Clark's delegate count. And on that 46th round of voting, Wilson got it.
Amazingly, it took 46 ballots for the worst president in American history to finally win his party's nomination. So the stage was set for a major showdown in the general election between Republican President Taft and the Democratic challenger Woodrow Wilson. However, Teddy Roosevelt wasn't about to give up his progressive party dream so easily. Roosevelt left the GOP and started a new American party called the Bull Moose Party, or the Progressive Party. Yes, for those who refused to recognize it, it was the Republicans that started the Progressive Party. When you're running under the banner Bull Moose or Progressive Party, the name sounds every bit progressive, but so did the words of Theodore Roosevelt.
We propose, on the contrary, to extend governmental power in order to secure the liberty of the wage workers, of the men and women who toil in industry, to save the liberty of the oppressed from the oppressor.
Hiding his true leanings, as so many progressives do, Roosevelt set out a plan to put a positive spin on his new progressive politics.
Instead of instruments to promote the general welfare, they have become the tools of corrupt interests which use them impartially to serve their selfish purposes. Behind the ostensible government sits enthroned an invisible government, owing no allegiance and acknowledging no responsibility to the people. To destroy this invisible government, to dissolve the unholy alliance between corrupt business and corrupt politics, is the first task of the statesmanship of the day. Unhampered by tradition, uncorrupted by power, undismayed by the magnitude of the task, the new body offers itself as the instrument of the people to sweep away old abuses, to build a new and nobler commonwealth.
Taft did his part to counter the popular unrest and division being created by Roosevelt, but perhaps not in the most electric or exciting ways.
But insofar as the propaganda for the satisfaction of unrest involves the promise of a millennium, a condition in which the rich are to be made reasonably poor and the poor reasonably rich by law, we are chasing a phantom. We are holding out to those whose unrest we fear a prospect and a dream, a vision of the impossible. After we have changed all the governmental machinery so as to permit instantaneous expression of the people in constitutional amendments, in statutes, and in recall of public agents, what then?
Almost sounding desperate, Taft bellowed on.
Votes are not bread. Constitutional amendments are not work. Referendums do not pay rent or furnish houses. Recalls do not furnish clothing. Initiatives do not supply employment or relieve inequalities of condition or of opportunity. We still ought to have set before us the definite plans to bring on complete equality of opportunity and to abolish hardship and evil for humanity.
Seemingly splitting the difference between the two and presenting himself as the reasonable alternative was Woodrow Wilson.
There is a new party which it is difficult to characterize because it is made up of several elements. As I see it, it is made up of three elements in particular. The first consists of those Republicans whose consciences and whose stomachs could not stand what the regular Republicans were doing. Added to this element are a great many men and women of noble character and of elevated purpose who believe that this combination of forces may in the future bring them out on a plane where they can accomplish those things which their hearts have so long desired. I have no word of criticism for them. Then there is a third element in the new party, of which the less said, the better. To discuss it would be interesting, only if I could mention names, and I have forbidden myself that indulgence. We have in this party two things, a political party and a body of social reformers.
Wilson continued, making it seem like there was no way the presidency could ever accomplish the reforms he sought. Never mind that years later, Wilson wouldn't let that stop him when he was the chief executive.
Mr. Roosevelt puts forth an admirable platform of what he would like to do for the people. But how is he going to do it? He proposes in his platform not to abolish monopoly, but to take it under the legal protection of the government and to regulate it. In other words, to take the very men into partnership who have been making it impossible to carry out these great programs by which all of us wish to help the people. It is perfectly idle to talk of doing things when your hands are tied for you, so long as the men who now control the industry of the country continue to control it.
As the election drew near, just 3 weeks prior, while campaigning in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, he was about to deliver a speech when Roosevelt was shot. From the Roosevelts, an intimate portrait.
The bullet passed through the ex-president's spectacles case and the folded 50-page speech behind it, smashed through his chest wall and lodged in a splintered rib less than a quarter of an inch from his heart. Roosevelt dabbed at his mouth, found no blood, and concluded his lungs were undamaged.
Roosevelt informed the crowd that he had been shot, asked them to keep the noise level down as he was unable to project too loudly. He showed his glasses case to his audience, the bullet hole that remained, and displayed his bloody shirt beneath his jacket.
He insisted on delivering his speech despite his wound. What we progressives are trying to do is to enroll rich and poor, to stand together for the most elementary rights of good citizenship. Mr. Wilson has distinctly committed himself to the old flintlock muzzle-loaded doctrine of states' rights. We are for the people's rights. Pale and sometimes swaying at the podium, he went on for more than an hour before his aides could get him to stop and agree to go to the hospital.
In an age of people seeking medical treatment because they may have heard a word that triggered a negative feeling, it's nearly impossible to believe that a man who was severely wounded after being shot in the chest and bleeding profusely could deliver a 90-minute speech before agreeing to any kind of medical care. But that was the world of 1912, especially if you were standing anywhere around Theodore Roosevelt. What is almost as hard to believe was the Marxist rhetoric coming from the formerly fairly conservative Republican war hero, President Roosevelt. As it turned out, it was probably inevitable. Roosevelt and Taft would split the Republican vote, ensuring a Woodrow Wilson victory. Yes, we all have the fat bathtub president to thank for Woodrow Wilson. That's exactly what happened. Wilson received 42% of the vote, Roosevelt was second, and Taft was third. Together, Roosevelt and Taft cornered 50% of the American people's vote. Socialist Eugene Debs finished a distant fourth at 6%. Woodrow Wilson used his victory to begin the fundamental transformation of the United States of America, reinstating segregation in the military and civil service, and giving life to the KKK in the process. Yet, despite all of that and more, historians continue to place him among the top five presidents in U.S. history. Next time, the crazy election of 1948.
Tomorrow on the Glenn Beck Program, in Chapter 4 of The Craziest Elections in History, you'll learn about the elections of Harry S. Truman, JFK, and George W. Bush. Listen live or online at glennbeck.com/serials.
Like, no.
That's crazy. That is...
Is that amazing?
I mean, what's amazing? There's so many points there that are amazing.
I know.
La Follette, who is one... Wisconsin's governor, home of progressivism.
Yeah, he's one of the founders of progressivism.
Right. On the right, on the Republican side.
Yeah.
Theodore Roosevelt speaking about Marxism, Woodrow Wilson, the king of progressives, and Eugene Debs with Woodrow Wilson on the left.
That was an unbelievably bad election.
There was only one guy constitutional.
And it was Taft.
It was Taft.
And because Roosevelt had such an ego and desperately wanted to be president again, he split the vote and we wound up with
Wilson.
Yeah,
don't be blaming the fat man.
Yeah, it was Roosevelt's fault. Yeah. It was absolutely Roosevelt.
It was
him.
And let me tell you something else. Imagine any candidate today being shot as they're walking in to give a speech.
In the chest.
Okay, in the chest.
Standing there for 90
with
minutes.
With blood coming out on their shirt, so it's seeping out on their shirt.
Uh-huh.
Going on stage, doing that, giving a rip-roaring speech. It was a great speech.
Yeah.
A rip-roaring speech. Then he's finally, because he's so weak, he's taken off stage. Tell me that in the time of social media and television, that guy would
be president.
He'd be president.
Yeah, he'd be president.
He would win with 90%.
Uh-huh.
I want the guy with a bullet in his chest. You see him?
I concluded there's no blood in my lungs. I'm going to continue.
Yeah. It's amazing.
That's nice.
That's the way he was,
amazing
though.
Story.
I mean, he was just bull moose,
yeah.
You know, really is the...
The other thing is, the Republican Party at this time was trying to co-opt Coolidge into all of that, too, into the progressive wing. And he refused.
Yeah,
fortunately.
Yeah, we have a series on Coolidge coming.
Yeah.
You will, Jeffy just said, because he's doing a lot of the interviews.
I've become a fan.
He
was
great.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, we're reaching out to all of the greatest scholars on Coolidge.
He's
Coolidge
always ranked low by scholars and historians.
He
he's one of my favorites.
Yeah, he
he's
is.
Top five.
He's probably
he's top
the
five.
He is, I think he was the best president of the 20th century. Reagan was very, very good.
And Reagan was a fan.
Right. Yeah. That was his favorite president.
Yeah.
Reagan was very, very good and ended the Cold War. But Coolidge took progressivism and sucked it out of society.
Sure did.
I mean, he
lived it too. Yeah, that's the most important thing is he lived it.
Yeah. His childhood says a lot.
Yes,
that's
it does.
That's a serial that is coming soon. And if you want to, you know, listen to any or watch the serials online, they're free. Please take them, spread them, and share them with a friend. You can find them online at glenbeck.com/serials.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
I can't believe how much I hated history when I was a kid.
I know.
I think all of us did. Progressives have destroyed history.
I didn't.
You didn't? You
no,
liked
I
history?
Loved it. I've always loved it.
Oh, man. They are the greatest stories.
Unbelievable.
They just have to know. You just have to know how to tell them and where they are. But they're just the greatest stories.
Yeah, and you find out so many things that are just like unbelievable to us at this time. You know, like the Teddy Roosevelt thing.
That could
have
never
no
happened.
Politician on earth who would be shot in the chest and just stand there and speak for an hour and say, "Hey, look, if you guys could keep it down a little bit, I can't project much because I have a bullet in my lung." And then go for an hour and a half. He went 90 minutes before he went to the hospital.
Nobody would do that now. Nobody would do that.
Way. If you get a hangnail on the way up the stairs, you're going home.
And beyond that, all the conservatives that say, "I love Theodore Roosevelt," but they don't know that he was, in many ways, more radical than Woodrow Wilson.
What he was
proposing was more radical than Woodrow Wilson. And nobody knows that in the Republican Party.
No.
They all love Theodore Roosevelt.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.